From NPR, it's Latino USA.
I think the significance is first that we can step away from all of the rhetoric and the posturing that 1070 was encouraging, and I hope calm down.
In Arizona, an uneasy peace, an unsettled calm. A federal judge invalidates several key portions of the state's controversial immigration law. But the work of democracy is far from over.
It is a definite setback. So we can't just sit back and take this. We need to appeal it. But I'm very confident that ultimately this law is going to be upheld.
How do the people of Arizona move forward with a stripped-down version of SB 1070 and with an appeal from the governor's mansion? The Voices of Arizona on this edition of Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us.
From the Latino USA News Desk, I'm Sean Collins with some notes on the news. This week, much of it taking place in the border state of Arizona. From the spring day the Arizona legislature passed a bill in the Senate, people started the countdown. They counted with hope if they saw the law as a solution to illegal immigration. One woman said it made her feel that someone cared about her. Others looked at the calendar with dread. Would they be arrested, deported? A landscaper said he feared a witch hunt. Some prepared and filed lawsuits to stop the law, while the police created a training video on how to enforce it. The U.S. government sued the state, saying the bill challenged federal authority. On the day before the law was set to go into effect, a federal judge issued a decision that blocked key parts. That was Wednesday.
It was a victory, ¿verdad? A victory. We're real happy, real glad.
Jose Luis Avila is a musician, one of hundreds of people who have kept vigil on the statehouse lawn for months. It's been an uneasy summer so far in Arizona, and it doesn't seem that this ruling will change things much. Here's Terry Goddard, the Attorney General of Arizona. He's also a Democratic candidate for governor.
I think the significance is first that we can step away from all of the rhetoric and the posturing that 1070 was encouraging, and I hope calm down as a state and focus on the real problems. And I believe those are illegal immigration and border crime. And 1070 did not do anything to help with the border crime problem, which I thought was one of its most severe weaknesses. And it was an imperfect vehicle in terms of immigration reform. It obviously said, we have an immigration problem, here's our solution. The federal government has stepped in along with other plaintiffs and said to the court, that's not a good solution, that's unconstitutional. The court agreed. And so now it seems to me the burden is on the federal government, on the Congress of the United States, to do what they should have done years ago and reform our immigration system.
Arizona's governor, Jan Brewer, did appeal the injunction on the very day the remaining parts of SB 1070 went into effect. Thursday was a day that saw police in riot gear on the streets of downtown Phoenix, as people protesting that the law was not thrown out entirely took to the streets as well. There were several arrests made, with shouts of "We will not live in fear" and "Racists go home." The crowd moved between the cathedral in the early morning and a number of government sites in Phoenix throughout the day, including the headquarters of Joe Arpaio, the Maricopa County Sheriff's Department. The controversial sheriff picked Thursday for his 17th large-scale, quote, crime suppression sweep.
We did pick this day, and I said 2 weeks ago, it doesn't matter what the ruling is by the federal judge, that we're going to do it anyway.
We have more on reaction from Arizona coming up in a few minutes. But first, a few other items. Latino immigrants, mostly Mexican, in Staten Island, New York, are afraid. They've been attacked repeatedly, coming home from work or leaving a soccer game. New York City's police commissioner, Raymond Kelly, has sent extra police to Port Richmond, Staten Island. And this week, he assigned 8 Mexican-born officers to that community. He said, "We simply are not going to tolerate this hateful conduct." 8 people have been arrested, but the fear is still strong. Now, some numbers. Entrepreneurs and politicians will certainly take note of this. One in every six U.S. residents is Hispanic. It's a huge increase from the last official census, a 42% jump. This news, though, comes from Ad Age, which, of course, is interested in the market potential. And here's what they found out. This growing group of Latinos sounds and looks like our idealized version of America in the 1950s. American Latinos are young. They often live in large traditional families. There are children and lots of participation from grandparents. The ad magazine suggests a new tagline, as American as dulce de leche. Remember, you can stay connected to news throughout the week by visiting us online at latinousa.org or follow LatinoUSA, that's all one word, on Twitter for updates throughout the week delivered to your mobile phone. Maria's back in 30 seconds with more from Arizona. I'm Sean Collins in St. Louis.
It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. 100 days in the desert. Phoenix is desert. 100 days since April, there have been people keeping vigil on the lawn of the state capitol. And July 28th of this week was no exception. Perhaps a little more crowded than has been the norm. Kids, musicians, abuelas, activists. Some kind souls handed out water to anyone, whether they're supporters of the law, opponents, television crews from L.A., Tempe, or Tucson. And there were the guys on their jingling bikes selling paletas, because of course, you gotta eat, even in the heat. It was hot, soul-baking hot, but the vigil continued. Under a sky that threatened rain, the clouds rolling past the sun, providing just a welcome respite. And beneath it all, as we first saw for ourselves in April, Los Santos, a shrine to La Virgen y todos los santos, with candles and flowers. By now, you've heard the details. The Arizona law went into effect this week, but without its teeth. On Wednesday, federal judge Susan Bolton invalidated key portions of SB 1070. You can read her decision on our website at latinousa.org, and I recommend that you do. It's 36 pages long. You can read it in about an hour. And at the end of the hour, you'll appreciate just how complex the question of immigration enforcement is, how precious our civil liberties are, and how crucial it is for us as a nation to maintain a uniform respect for visitors and our neighbors. Jenny Rivera teaches at the City University of New York Law School. We spoke to her right after the decision came out on Wednesday. You can hear that entire interview at latinousa.org, but here she is talking about this particular issue of international responsibility.
So there is clearly a recognition by the judge that regardless of Arizona's intentions and motivations, the reality is that the responsibility for immigration and the responsibility for one of the consequences of immigration policy, which is our international relationships and the security and safety of people in the United States, lies squarely with the federal government. And even if, as the court says at the end, even if Arizona's provisions in this statute are really in line with what is the goal of the federal law, nevertheless, that might still undermine and impede federal policy and federal enforcement of its own laws.
Jenny Rivera from the CUNY Center for Latino and Latina Rights and Equality in New York. Andrew Thomas is the former attorney for Maricopa County. He resigned in April when he announced he was running for Attorney General of Arizona, and he's also the subject of ongoing investigations by the FBI and the Arizona State Bar regarding allegations of unethical behavior. But he does speak for a segment of the Arizona populace who believe it's more than reasonable to check the citizenship status of people who are stopped by the police in Arizona.
I am very disappointed because that goes to the heart of 1070, the ability to check arrestees and find out whether or not they're in the country legally. And the reasons that were given, I disagree with the judge's decision and the reasons that were given. I mean, the idea that it causes an undue burden on the federal government to ask about citizenship status or and ask for immigration paperwork. What about the undue burden on American citizens who are being overwhelmed by this border crisis? But what about the undue burden on us?
Stephen Montoya is one of the attorneys who filed a challenge to SB 1070 on behalf of police officers.
It's a significant decision politically, but legally, honestly, it ought not to be a significant decision because I don't think it was a very difficult issue legally. I think that the judge simply enforced the law that has existed in the United States for decade after decade after decade. The United States Supreme Court has always said that the federal government was in charge of immigration law and that to the extent that state and local law enforcement agencies could enforce federal immigration law, they could only do so under the auspices with the authorization of the federal government.
Again, here's Andrew Thomas.
The judge went to the heart of the legislation and struck it down. So we can't just sit back and take this. We need to appeal it. We need to go the distance here. But I'm very confident that ultimately this law is going to be upheld because it was carefully crafted. And the idea that it's an undue burden on the federal government for Arizona to try to deal with the illegal immigration problem that the federal government created in the first place by not defending the border, I think is an absurdity that is not going to be upheld in the long run.
Qué triste que unos números nos cambien la felicidad. Qué triste que unos papeles con 1070 nos quiten la felicidad. Por eso, hermana.
There's a he said, she said quality to a lot of the coverage out there of political difference, really of any social dispute. And that's unfortunate for so many reasons. One being that it tends to reinforce the notion that there are only two sides to a story. Whenever a journalist says, I got both sides, red flags should go up. Because few things in life are just two-sided. These issues are more like jewels. They have many facets. Turn it this way and you see one aspect. Turn it slightly another way and you see another. Change your perspective and you radically change your view on the entire thing. And as you talk to residents of Arizona, you get the sense that they get it. They know how complex the issue is. The friendships married to the rule of law, married to the fear of narco crime, married to a sense of fairness, married to a desire to live in peace and with liberty. They get it. The reporters, not so much. The politicians, well, you get the sense that maybe there's gain to be had for furthering the divide. The only way to stake your political fortune, maybe, is to claim ever more strident positions. We met Cody in downtown Phoenix. He was grocery shopping. He's a criminology student at ASU and thinks the best way to voice his displeasure with how this debate is being played out is at the ballot box.
I'm not going to support xenophobia. I'm not going to support fear-mongering for political capital. You know, it's just ridiculous. What I really would like to have happen is have the media, instead of just taking this very simple bipartisan a reporting of this is their side, and get to the more substantial issues. You know, if people were more aware of the complexities of the issue, I think that'd be a lot less. It would be a lot less be a lot less heated debate. You know, like, the most bastardly part of this legislation is that over a third of our legally residing Latinos are going to be subject to an increased police enhancement. That's ridiculous. You know, like, if Steve Nash, a Canadian, you know, plays for our Suns, he's walking around undocumented in Arizona, he's not going to be harassed because he's a white guy. But if a legally residing Latino Arizonan is walking around, he's going to be subject to, where's your papers? Where's your papers? You need to prove to me that you're a legally residing Arizonan. It's just ridiculous.
Latino USA was in Phoenix in April when SB 1070 was first signed into law. We sat down with four college students who were willing to risk arrest to make the point that Cody just made in our interview this week. Ernesto is a U.S. citizen. In April, he told us he was stopped multiple times by the police when he drove back to Phoenix from a family reunion in Mexico. An American-born Latino, a citizen of this country, had to explain to law enforcement agents repeatedly in one afternoon what he was doing, why he was where he was, where he'd been, where he was going. We ran into Ernesto again this week when proponents of the Arizona law say it could have been enforced without racial profiling. Well, that argument falls on deaf ears for a young man who has seen flashing lights in his rearview mirror so many times.
America doesn't see certain people as Americans. And it's easy to ignore the Constitution. It's easy to ignore certain rights when other people's rights are being violated and yours are not. And as an American, I feel kind of sad to think that people who are for freedom, people who are for civil rights, people who are for justice, all these good things, you hear the news and people are like, yes, we're for America, for justice, the Constitution. And people are always throwing out the Constitution and the Constitution, and Obama's violating the Constitution, different people are violating the Constitution. And this is, SB 1070 is pretty blatant that it's a violation of Constitution. I mean, we have to, on a daily basis, take our documents out and show police officers that we are here legally, you know? Obviously, this is, to me, it's blatant that it's a violation of our Constitution. And it's just the state is overusing its power and taking the federal powers into its own hands. And it seems like people don't really care about it. So it seems that, as an American, it seems like certain people use the Constitution whenever they want to and ignore it whenever they want to. So the Constitution doesn't it seems like it's not for all Americans. It's just for certain Americans.
You see a guy like Ernesto Lopez and you wonder where he gets it. He's wise, but somehow that wisdom seems like a burden. He's young, too young to carry the weight he carries. You wonder, why does he stay in Arizona, where he's forced to live with this particular struggle every hour of every day? And in the end, you think, Ernesto is just brave. This much is clear. Nothing's over in Arizona. Not the lawmaking, the law enforcement, the social change, the struggle, the fight for civil liberty and acceptance. All of that continues, as it should, in the land of the free and the home of the brave. Our coverage from Arizona was reported this week by Nick Blumberg and Valeria Fernandez in Phoenix. In a minute, Crossing Borders and Time in Books, the writings of John Philip Santos. No se vayan. You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. What comes to mind when you think of your family? I mean, families come in so many different shapes and sizes and colors. When I think of my familia, I think of my son and my daughter, so smart and growing up so fast. I think of my husband, who brings art to the family, my brother in L.A., my parents and sister in Chicago, and my other brother and a bunch of primos and tíos back in Mexico. If you ask writer John Philip Santos, he'll tell you that his family extends far through the reaches of space and time. He might tell you about his grandmother, who he remembers fondly growing up in San Antonio, Texas. Or he could tell you about Juan Vela, a conquistador who arrived in Mexico in 1534, a possible ancestor who came from the old world to the new. In his new book, The Farthest Home is an Empire of Fire, a Tejano Elegy, John Philip Santos brings us along as he searches for the story of his family, and in the end, tells us the story of Latinos as Americans. John Philip Santos joins us from the studios of KSTX in San Antonio. Welcome to Latino USA, John.
Mil gracias to you, Maria.
You are someone who looks at the world in a very kind of cosmic way, and yet you do live now close to that border in a very carnal way. You experience the kind of close-mindedness, the opposite of what you're trying to raise in your book, which is that, you know, we are all universal migrants from one place to another. So how does that jive for you, John? You know, you're
well,
just kind of,
you know, storytellers like us, we have to give the testimonio to what is transpiring, you know. So right now I'm working on a story about the secret burial grounds that are used surreptitiously, really as a kind of a subculture of potter's fields in South Texas, where they bury the indocumentados who are found dead in the fields. So to humanize the tale that's being told otherwise in terms of Tea Party movement and SB 1070 and all of the sort of ways in which the story becomes impersonal and theoretical and political, one of the challenges of the storyteller, the griot, is to remind everyone of the humanity of the story that we're living. So, you know, that's one way for me to approach it, is to give some witness to some of the things that happen that people are less aware of, that are a part of the everyday life of the border. And in this book, I tell the story of an encounter when I'm coming across a small, sleepy checkpoint, and a border agent in a sleepy border checkpoint searches my truck with a dog, with mirrors, with chemical swabs, and finally, before he lets me go on, I remind him that, you know, I'm going to I'm in the region doing a research trip on family names, and his badge shows that he's a Guerra, one of the families that I'm descended from, and we ended up being distant cousins, and so here were two cousins from a family that had been in the land since the 1620s. And were part of the expeditions that founded many of the villages that still exist around the border. And yet, here's one cousin who is enforcing the border at all costs, and the other cousin imminently expecting the demise of the border.
So when you say, you know, the subtitle of your book, it's called The Farthest Home is in an Empire of Fire, a Tejano Elegy. So who is the elegy for?
The elegy is about a recognition of a certain kind of poignancy that even as I sought out and sought to tell the stories of the antepasados of South Texas and what was once northern New Spain, and those ancestors who came over from Iberia, from Asturias to these lands, even as I tell those ancestral tales, And before the task of telling their story and recovering their legacy is complete, there is a recognition that we are already becoming something new, that this period, this time of the Tejano tale is itself metamorphosing into something new, that we are becoming a different kind of entity as Chicanos of South Texas as U.S. Latinos. We're coming into a new kind of role in these lands. There's a challenge to reconnect to this civilizational source, but we are nonetheless already becoming something new. So that's an elegiac recognition for me. It's one that has a certain quality of sadness or poignancy about it. This book says essentially, wherever you think you come from ancestrally, there are ancestors calling to you from before then who come from someplace very different. And the challenge to us as humans is to give a testimonio to that great panorama of our ancestry.
Do you think America, and let's not talk about the world, but just this country, can they take what you're writing and say, yes, I see this? Or do you think it's really much more difficult than you could have imagined?
It is difficult. It's an enormous challenge because it's almost an evolutionary shift in the way that we understand ourselves. So it's not likely to be something that can transpire in our lifetimes, but it's something that I think all of us as Latino storytellers, poets, performers, writers, creative folk have to offer testimonio to. And in fact, I think more than ever, what we're challenged to do is to bring forth the deepest meaning of Latinidad, which is this legacy that our ancestors call us to remind the rest of our nation about, which is that we are all the products of diaspora, of migration, of transformation, of dispossession, of minoritization. You know, every ethnic group has gone through some interval of minoritization. But we need to remind ourselves that our minority identity was itself a transitional phase, was itself an illusion. And that's the task that we are called upon to bring to the rest of the nation. That's a prophetic charge that the Latino community has to, in a sense, rise to now.
Thank you for opening up that conversation. You know, we'll see where the country goes, but thank you for bringing up the central idea of what Latinidad means in America today, John. So thanks again.
Mil gracias to you.
John Philip Santos' latest book is The Farthest Home is an Empire of Fire, a Tejano Elegy. It's available from Viking Press. And for this week, that's Latino USA. The program is a production of The Futuro Media Group, online at futuromediagroup.org. In association with KUT Austin. The producer is Mincha Jacob. The editor, Katie Davis. You can listen to the show on demand at latinousa.org. And you'll find news updates there throughout the week. And you should totally be following us on Twitter. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week when we're in Puerto Rico on NPR's Latino USA.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and from Lumber Liquidators, whose flooring includes pre-finished and stained solid hardwoods, bamboo, cork, and laminates. Information at lumberliquidators.com. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, committed to helping Americans lead healthier lives and get the care they need. On the web at rwjf.org. This is NPR.